We're continuing in our series on testimony, and today we're switching a little bit, and so we're going to be listening to a story from the Gospel of Mark that's actually a lot about testimony. I don't think we tend to read it that way, but that's actually what this is about. So I invite you to listen through the power of the Holy Spirit for God's living word for us today.
The reading today is from Mark 5, verses 1 through 20. I'll be reading from the New Revised Standard Version, and it would be on page 972 in your pew Bible. Jesus and the disciples came to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, to the country of Gennesaret. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately a man out of the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. He lived among the tombs, and no one could constrain him anymore, even with a chain. For he had often been restrained with shackles and chains. But the chains he wrenched apart, and the shackles he broke in pieces, and no one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and the mountains, he was always howling and bruising himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and bowed down before him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God not to torment me." And then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" And he replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." He begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now there on the hillside, a great herd of swine was feeding, and the unclean spirits begged him, send us into the swine. Let us enter them." And so he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered in the swine and the herd, numbering about 2,000. The swine rushed down the steep bank into the sea, where they were drowned. The swineherders ran off and told the city and in the country. Then the people came to see what it was that had happened. They came to Jesus and saw the demoniac sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, the very man who had the legion, and they were afraid. Those who had seen what had happened to the demoniac and the swine reported it. Then they began to beg Jesus to leave their neighborhood. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed by demons begged him that he might be with him. But Jesus refused and said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy he has shown you." And he went away and began to proclaim the Decapolis, how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed.
This is the word of the Lord. We went to the movies last night and saw Blindspotting. I know that several of you have seen that I know it was in the newsletter this week. I put a little link to an article talking about how Oakland is in the middle of all of this movie stuff going on. I must admit, if you go to Grand Lake Theater and you're watching a sold-out movie about Oakland with everybody from Oakland, there's no energy like that. A lot of good stuff. In fact, people started clapping as they drove by some of the landmarks. This was just in the titles, the beginning of the movie. Nothing had happened. And it's a remarkable movie. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but I found it was overwhelming. I know Pat Schroeder, who's teaching Sunday school, we talked about it and saying, you need to see it several times to see all the complexity and the depth of what it is talking about. Because it's not just about race. It is about the dynamic factors that are facing our city and that we are trying to face. And it's a beautiful beginning of the movie because they have side-by-side images of one side of the problem and the other side of the problem. One perspective and the other perspective. How do we live together when we see things so differently? It was remarkable because it was entertaining. It also was overwhelming. Christy came home and said, I need to watch about 3 hours of sitcom in order to get over this. We then watched the final sitcom that was all about illegal immigration. That didn't help much. And yet, it really, I think, got to the point of the complexity of things that we understate how complex the problems are that we're facing. And they are complex, aren't they? Race, gentrification, poverty, inclusion, the price of housing, access, identity. It is overwhelming these days. I was struck by the news. That's a stupid thing to say. I struck by the news. We're all struck by the news. I'm usually struck off my feet by the news every day. But in particular, I saw a story this week about Mr. Nasser, who was arrested for abusing all those women that were gymnasts. And he had to be moved in jail, if you had followed that. And usually what happens is people that have abused children sexually like that in jail usually are put into solitary confinement in jail because everybody wants to kill them out of jail and also in the jail. And so we were talking in our family, and we had fortune and misfortune in our family to have one of our children's teachers arrested this year for pedophilia. We had the fortune in the sense that none of our children suffered or children in that school, but other children did. And in talking with one of my daughters, I don't try to overlook the horribleness of it, but also try to tease out a sense of compassion for someone who's clearly mentally ill. Now, not compassion, no tolerance for what happens, but realizing, just trying to name that that person will live in hell for the rest of their life. And I'm always told, well, what about the kids? That's true. But it's complex. One is not greater than the other. I don't think one person deserves more compassion than the other. And yet there is a sense of justice where one person is wrong. And yet it's complex. Like the movie, like the problems we're facing, it's complex. I was talking with Sharon this week, and she reminded me of something. She brought up something that her mother had taught her about love and hate, that you don't hate. And in the midst of all this, I remembered one of the famous sayings of Dr. King, who said, darkness cannot drive out darkness. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can drive out hate. Only light can drive out darkness. And I think about that with today's story, where we have this man who is in darkness, who is lost, who is excluded. It's simple and complex, this story. I think about our society, and I think there's lots of things wrong with our world. You probably do too. And I don't think it's one person or one party or one problem or one drug addiction or one country in our world that are causing the problems. When I look at things, I think we have three main problems that we are facing as a society, as a church, as people, as Oaklanders. Three problems that we struggle to know what to do with. Those problems are social isolation and alienation. In the midst of being hyper-connected, supposedly by technology and smartphones and in the world, we are more alone than ever. In fact, the last Surgeon General said that social isolation is the major cause of illness in our nation today. The second huge challenge we're facing is mistrust. Mistrust of authorities, mistrust of each other, maybe even mistrust of ourselves. Mistrust that there is a higher authority. And I think one of the other third and final huge challenge we're facing is meaning. How do we find meaning in life? What is a life that makes meaning, that has meaning? They are complex questions and challenges. There's not a simple answer. And yet there are truthful answers to those things. It's like the movie, it's like the story of some of those people in prison. It's like what Dr. King said, hate cannot drive out hate. Darkness cannot chase out darkness. Only light and love can do that. In our time of great change, who do we listen to? Who do we look to? Who do you listen to? Who do you look to? We can either think it's all up to us, think, well, who am I? What can I do? Or we can also think, well, we're just screwed. Everything is going down. Or we can feel completely cut off and impotent to do anything, to feel anything, to dare anything. And I think about this man in this story. Now, I have always been struck by the story where it talks about Legion. There's that many demons inside this man, and all the demons are sent to the pigs, and they rush off the cliff, and they fall into the water. And, I mean, it's made for, like, Tom Cruise sort of Mission Impossible movie. And yet, underneath it, it's easy in the midst of the hoopla to forget that it's about this man. And did you catch his name in the story? He has no name. He has no name. What's interesting, when you look at the Gospel of Mark, the first miracle in Mark's gospel is an exorcism, just like this one. There are only two exorcisms in Mark where the evil forces speak. This is the second one. It is connected with the first miracle of Jesus, in which Jesus says, "This is what I am about. Let's get to business." This man is cut off from everybody. He lives among the tombs. He's as good as dead. And Jesus brings him back to life. Now, I've heard a lot of people say, well, you know, I just can't believe in those kind of stories because I don't believe in demons. I don't believe in spirits. I believe in what we can see. So it can't really be about demons. I've read lots of historians that say, well, you know, when you look at the ancient world, most of the time when they talk about demon possession, they're talking about epilepsy. And that was how they understood it, which that makes a lot of sense to me. Or severe mental illness like bipolar or multiple personalities, that's how you understood it. And that makes a lot of sense. Do you have to believe in bad spirits or demon possession in order to believe the story? Or can you reject that and still be rational and hear what the story is saying? I've heard a lot of people talk about that. And I think when we follow those threads, we lose and miss out on what the story is about. For what Mark says is this man has an unclean spirit. Now, in the Bible, the word for spirit is also the word for breath. And the word for unclean is also the word that means unrighteous, or it means the opposite of what God intends. And so this man literally has a breath that is the opposite of what God intends. If you remember the story of creation, Human life begins when God breathes the divine breath into the creature, and it becomes alive. So this man is literally and linguistically lost. He is cut off. He is the opposite of what God intends. He is alienated. He is mistrusted. He has no meaning. But Jesus claims him. And at the end of the story, what's actually even more remarkable than the pigs running off the cliff and all that fun stuff that's so exciting is the man wants to go with Jesus. And he says no. What? How could Jesus say no? That's not very loving. How could you make the man stay there? Nobody likes him. Nobody wants him. They made him live among the dead. What kind of future does he have? Is he going to do like an internship where he slowly moves back into the city? Jesus says, no. Go home to your friends, to your family. Tell them what God has done for you. God, through Jesus, has risen this man from the dead. He was blind and now he sees. He was nobody and now he is sent. Many biblical scholars will say this is actually the very first missionary in the work of Jesus. Jesus sends him out to tell his story. And did you notice how the story ends? He goes and everyone is amazed. They're not just like, well, that's pretty cool. They're amazed. They are shaken to the core. It is a response that transforms this alienation, that transforms this mistrust, that gives new meaning to this man's life, but also to the life of the people to whom he testifies. Throughout the summer, we're talking about testimony and how we have experienced God's person and purpose and passion in our lives. We've heard different stories about prayer in the midst of a tragedy, about our children and prayers for them. Different ways in which we have experienced God. Now, I always learned when I was growing up that you need to have your testimony ready because when you are in the elevator going down in a big building, you need to be ready when Bill Gates or Ronald Reagan or somebody famous gets into the elevator with you and you need to pitch them Jesus in 30 seconds or less. Now, in the story, I never hear Jesus saying to the guy, go home to your family and friends and work on that 30-second pitch because that's about as long as you're going to get when you're walking down to the seashore to fish. He says, go and tell them what the Lord has done for you, the mercy that God has shown you. It is not a pitch. It is not a rationalization. It is not an explanation. It is not justification. It is the man's story. I was blind and now I see. I was dead and now I am alive. That's what testimony is, actually. I spent so much time working on that, trying to have it on one cue card, one little note card. I used to carry a note card around in my pocket thinking that's what I was supposed to be able to do if I was faithful, to have that pitch memorized and to have it in my back pocket just in case I needed it on my college campus where there was one elevator that went down three floors. That's not even 30 seconds. What we are called to do is fight and resist the forces of alienation in our worlds, the forces of mistrust, the forces that say that our life and that life in general has no meaning. The Bible calls those forces sin. We might say those forces are a modern society. And we fight those and resist those, just like this man in the story, by remembering, by reclaiming, by retelling that we are created and made, and God intends for us to have God's breath within us, a clean spirit, that God can bring us back, that Jesus can deliver us. In fact, the name Jesus means God delivers. That's what his name means. God delivers. So we are called to celebrate our story, to tell what God has done for us. Now, if you just go out on the street and do that, I doubt many people will listen. If you go in the crosswalk, you'll probably end up dead in our city. And so we're not called just to do it flippantly. But if you think about the people in your life, you care about their stories, don't you? You care about what has happened to those people you call your own, and to the people you meet and who become part of your circle. You want to know what's going on in their lives. Testifying to who God is doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be tricky. It's not a pitch. It's not a justification. It's merely celebrating and telling our story. Now, you got to recognize your audience, because if you run into somebody on the street and they say, "How are you doing?" they're probably not looking for you to say, "Well, you know, let me tell you. You got 15 minutes? Now, I'm not saying that's good or bad. That's just how our society is. But we do, when we are in places and spaces where we want to know, we do want to know. And in a time in which we are told often that our story is not important enough, or maybe our opinion is not valid enough, or that we don't know enough, you alone are the expert on your life, on your story. This man who was raised from the dead by Jesus, he alone knew what it was like to come back from the dead. He had the ultimate authority over his story. And so if you testify and share your story, you are the authority. Now, you got to recognize that doesn't mean people want to hear like every single story that happened to you. But if people do ask you, they do want to know. It is a reminder that when Jesus says, "Tell them how much the Lord has done for you," it is not an impossible task. It's part of human life. It's part of being human. And it's not just a task we're supposed to do. I think that through it, God is redeeming the world. What happened to this town where the man went and told what God had done? We don't know. Jesus doesn't go back. But if you've ever sat with someone and they tell you something amazing, or maybe you've noticed it over the weeks in the summer where you've heard different testimonies, it frees you, it touches you, it empowers you, it changes you. It is contagious. God's love is contagious. That's in large part, I think, what Dr. King meant. Hate cannot drive out hate. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only love can do that. Only light can do that. When we tell our story, that's what we're doing. Amen. In response to the gospel this morning, we are singing hymn number 364. I sing a song of the saints of God.